Hey everyone, for today's special episode of Strictly Hoop Talk, I got a first-time guest on the podcast, my friend Young Simba, the 2K Messiah, one of my favorite YouTube 2K players. I just love to watch him stream 2K. He's a real dope dude. And so I had him on the podcast to talk some hoops. We talked a little bit of rap too, because he's a rap fan. So that's at the end of the podcast, as well as some NBA 2K talk. But the main focus of this podcast is post-free agency. We are now days away from the NBA training camp. God, does that seem crazy that the NBA training camp is already starting back up and the season is getting ready again. I got to start getting my fantasy league together, but that's a whole nother subject. In today's episode, we just talk about three teams that we each found interesting for some reason. And it was the draft and the free agency, just the off season that each team had, that was really, really interesting to us. So that was very, very fun. I promise I tried my hardest not to bring up the Pistons. The Pistons did sneak their way into this. It's not one of my three teams. It's not one of Young Simba's three teams. So it's not super in depth, but there was just a little minute Piston point. I'm trying to get better at not bringing up the Pistons every podcast, because you could turn that into a crazy drinking game, but I digress. Lastly, just some real quick housekeeping. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at RealChrisPlatte, CHRISPLATTE. I know you know how to spell real. Hit me up on there if you want an individualized playlist. I'm still doing some of those. I finished the batch of playlists that I was just currently working on. So if you hit me now, I can get you one relatively soon. And also, Twitter and Instagram are the best places to stay up to date on the content I have coming. I have some awesome audio content coming for the podcast, as well as some interesting video and visual content coming. So stay tuned for that. Be on the lookout. And those are the best places to stay up to date on that. Now, without further ado, let me throw it to the podcast. This is NBA post-free agency sit down with my boy Young Simba. Hello everyone, welcome to Strictly Hoop Talk. As always, I'm your host Chris Platty, and joining me is a special first time guest, my man, the 2K Messiah, Young Simba from YouTube. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Man, I'm doing good. This is a collaboration that's long overdue, my friend.
Yes, sir.
Man, and we'll get to your hip hop stuff in a minute at the end of this podcast, because I want to talk about that dope setup you got got going on with the hip hop. But for now, we're just gonna talk NBA free agency. So free agency is basically over at this point. Who knows? Everything is happening so fast. You never know what's gonna happen in the NBA now with this shortened off season. But free agency seems to be mostly over. Just crossing some T's and dotting some I's. So we each picked three teams that were interesting to us for whatever reason. It can be we liked the moves, we didn't like the moves, we're confused by the moves. Just off seasons that were just really interesting to us and stood out to us. And of my three teams, I'll go first, since one of my teams is a defending champion, the Los Angeles Lakers, and they deserve the right to start the podcast. So for me, you know, looking at what they did, they brought in Montrezl Harrell, they brought in Dennis Schroeder, Marcus Gasol, they re-signed KCP to 3 years, they got Markieff Morris back on the minimum, they got Wes Matthews joining the team on the minimum, and they lost Dwight Howard, Danny Green in the trade for Dennis Schroeder, Avery Bradley, who didn't play with them in the bubble, Quinn Cook, and Rajon Rondo to the Atlanta Hawks. So overall, when I look at this, I love this offseason for the Lakers. I thought that talent-wise, they got a little bit better. I don't think they got that much better. But again, I know Bradley wasn't in the bubble, but they just always felt in the bubble, one guard, one wing short to me. But again, I think their roster is even better than it was. So I think they're kind of the overwhelming favorites for me. What did you think of the Lakers offseason?
Yeah, I definitely think that they made some pretty significant improvements, especially with the guard play. Montrezl Harrell is a great pickup as well. And most importantly, they improved while the rest of the West, they improved, but they hadn't improved as much as the Lakers, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I really like them getting Dennis Schroder for Harrell, just because of the Lou Will Harrell picking game was so great in the Clippers that I think that Dennis Schroder is not the same player as Lou Williams, but again, just giving Harrell that dynamic ball handler to be able to run pick and roll with. Of course, he'll have LeBron James as well, but giving him that quick, fast point guard to run the pick and roll with, I think it's going to be very helpful for him. So I really liked that trade. All right, so that's my thing with the Lakers. Now I'm looking again. I feel like they're one guard or wing short. Is there anyone out there that you still think of that you think, man, that would be nice if the Lakers were able to get them?
Off the top of my head, I would have to go with Glenn Robinson. He's pretty good 3-and-D wise. Shooting is always great to bring to the team, and he'll probably be able to get picked up for a minimum contract. So I think that would be a decent pickup for them to get.
Yeah, I really like that pickup. That's actually who I had as well. And then maybe somebody down the line. I know Darren Collison kind of flirted with the idea of coming back. So maybe if they can get, even though I don't know they need a necessarily a ball handler like a point guard. I think they just need another a two or a three instead of maybe a one. But Darren Collison I think would help too if he ever decides to come out of retirement, because I know he kind of flirted with that. In the at the end of the at the end of the season there. So, okay, Young Simba, let's go with one of your teams. What's a team that stood out to you this offseason?
Me personally, I'm gonna have to start with my Pacers. I know this might not be flashy to most people, but in my personal opinion, I think it's great what they did this offseason. So they were able to pick up new coach Nate Borggren. I still haven't learned his name correctly, but I think that's a great pickup over Nate McMillan. He's supposed to be an offensive guru from what I've heard, and that's exactly what they need. Also, they decided to not acquire and overpay for Gordon Hayward, which was great. They got Justin Holiday back 3 years, 18 million, which is a steal. Great defender, 40% 3-point shooter all around the board. And then they traded TJ Leaf for Jalen Lecque, athletic guard. He might get some minutes under the new coach. And a lot of people are liking Cassius Stanley, another athletic guy. So me personally, I'm just happy to run it back with the same squad, and hopefully everyone can stay healthy.
Okay, see that's interesting, 'cause me as an outsider here when it comes to the Pacers are not my team, but and I'll admit they're the one really good team that just for whatever reason I wouldn't say I've watched the least, but they're the team that I'm the mo the least I guess I consider myself comfortable with my viewpoint on them. So maybe you could walk me through it, because to me, you brought up a lot of interesting points. You brought up the Gordon Hayward thing that seemed to happen, and what I heard from Bill Simmons, I believe it was, or Zach Lowe, that in the trade back, they were trading back Miles Turner, and Boston was trying to sniff around the league to see what kind of value Miles Turner had in a trade, and they didn't like the value that they perceived him to have. So they ultimately didn't want to do the Indiana thing. So I was actually kind of disappointed with that. But now when I see what Charlotte gave him, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, if that was the kind of money that we were talking for Gordon Hayward, I'm just, well, I hope Gordon Hayward lives up to that kind of money. I just don't see it right now. It's always tough when you deal with an injury that's so charismatic, so, or not charismatic, sorry, that's a totally wrong word. An injury that's so just gruesome and devastating and just mentally scarring, that I think that that's something to concern about with Hayward moving forward. But is that why you're interested in, or why you're happy that the Pacers didn't overpay for Hayward, is because you think that it was just too much value at the end of the day?
Yeah, I think first off, they were giving up too much value. I know Zach Lowe, like you said, the value for Miles Turner isn't that high, but I also think that's because he hasn't really been given much of an opportunity since his rookie season, since Nate McMillan has been hired, because they run more of a back-to-the-back offense, like they a lot of posts up and stuff, and that's not Miles Turner's game. He likes to shoot threes. He can take it off the dribble as a big. He could guard wings and guard the perimeter pretty well for a center, and his ability to stretch the floor out hasn't really been utilized. And the new coach this morning said he wants him shooting at least 6 or 7 threes a game. So that
Oh,
makes me very happy
okay.
as a Pacers fan.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay, so yeah, so I do agree with that. The Sabonis Turner fit, I don't think it's the most uncomfortable fit, especially in the Eastern Conference when you get to Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. But I do think that there's a little something to be worked out, and if this is the coach that can do it, then I think that it's going to raise even both of their values, because right now it's looked at as Sabonis is kind of the guy, is what it seems like, and Miles Turner is the one that's kind of on the outside, where a year ago it was totally flipped. So that's an interesting thing to watch, and I'll be very interested to see how that coach reinvents that offense, and if that can increase Miles Turner value. Because a year ago today, young Simba, we're sitting here and we're talking, oh, Miles Turner, a couple years, 18 million. That's a good deal. He's a young, promising center. He can block shots, he can shoot threes, he can switch on to wings, all the stuff you were talking about. So it's funny how a year passes and now it's almost seemed like it's a contract that not a lot of people would want.
Yep, I just hope that the new coach can work it out and everyone, most importantly, stays healthy. That's been the biggest problem the last, I don't know how many years as a Pacers fan. It's always just health every single season. So
Yeah,
hopefully they can stay healthy.
that's true. But I think the encouraging thing, I'm pretty optimistic on Oladipo this year, just because I think that when people go through hard injuries like that, I have very little expectations for them that first year, that first 6 months or whatever, however long of a time frame they have before they get fully healthy. So I'll be watching Victor Oladipo, and this is interesting. I'm glad you brought up the Pacers though, because even though, like you said, they didn't make flashy moves, all of their best players were under contract, but yet somehow this felt like an important offseason. They didn't trade Oladipo. They had a lot of just kind of rumors swirling around them. They changed coaches, which is a big change, but other than that, I mean, their core roster is the exact same, and so I think it's really interesting. Did it feel like it was an important off season to you going in, or not really?
Yeah, I feel like it was important just based on all the rumors. Like there was Miles Turner and Victor Oladipo allegedly wanted out. Victor Oladipo and Malcolm Brogdon wanted Nate McMillan fired during the playoffs. Like rumors came out like that. So I think they hit their mark for the most part. Re-signing Justin Holiday was the biggest thing to me. And then just running the core back together. And once again, health is going to have to be the most important thing. Hopefully Brogdon can stay healthy. And Warren and Sabonis recover from their plantar fasciitis.
Hey, you're talking to a Pistons fan, man. Blake Griffin on one leg was everything to us. So,
Yeah.
all right, let's jump to another team, which I promise I won't bring up the Pistons in this podcast, considering my last podcast was with James Edwards of The Athletic, and just all we talked about was the Pistons when there was 29 other teams. So I promise, listeners, you're not getting Piston talk this podcast. Let's bring up another Western Conference contender that's I'm not sure what to make of anymore, and that's the Houston Rockets. They brought in DeMarcus Cousins, they brought in Christian Woods, they lost Austin Rivers, Jeff Green, Robert Covington in the trade, in that trade to Portland, which then ended up shipping Ariza to Detroit, and a long and complicated trade. I got a couple questions here. The obvious question is, are we going to see any combination of Harden and or Westbrook at the start of the season for Houston, or just for how long? And the other takeaway, the first part I want to talk about is the bigs. I like the bigs that they got. I like Christian Woods, obviously, from Detroit, played very well. And I think it's a good contract for him. DeMarcus Cousins, I like him. I like him, as as a 2K player. He's that guy you always pick up when you're doing a my league real quick,
Yeah,
and just
definitely.
absolutely cheat the system by getting a dominant center off the free agency. Now, I don't know if he's as good as he is in 2K, but he's a good player to have. And I like the versatility that he gives Houston with also backing up Christian Woods, I assume. But again, losing Jeff Green, Robert Covington, and Austin Rivers, I all thought those were three big players for them who played really well. So I don't know if they got any better. So first off, let's talk about the fact of looking at the ins and the outs, the additions and subtractions. Did Houston get better? And then we'll get to the Harden-Westbrook stuff.
I think that Houston, they got better just simply because they're done with the small ball, PJ Tucker at center. I personally never thought that that was going to work out. I just had no faith in it. So I think them bringing in two pretty good bigs, well, at least Christian Wood, we'll see with DeMarcus Cousins after the injury. I think they got better by default.
Okay. Yeah. See, me, I think they got more balance, which I think will help them, especially considering that their coach is no longer Mike D'Antoni. And if anybody was able to, I actually think Mike D'Antoni did a fantastic job maximizing the situation in Houston. So I think that this is something that really is going to be up to see. Like, this is up in the air because Boogie and Christian Woods are nice additions, but we have no clue what this new coach is going to do. We have no clue how things are going to look. I'm not as plugged in to know kind of what the ins and outs will be, or what an early idea would look like of their system. How much is it still going to be Harden ball? What's the deal with Westbrook? So that leads me to the obviously the Harden Westbrook combination. It obviously both have demanded trades, and they've made it. Harden specifically has stated where he prefers to play. Westbrook has more so just kind of demanded a trade. You know, they got a new GM, they got a new head coach, just basically a new front office. Where is this Harden Westbrook thing going, in your opinion? Do you see one of them getting traded before the start of the season? Both of them, maybe they stay together to start the season and one gets moved at the deadline. What do you see happening in this Harden Westbrook Houston situation?
At this point, I think they're going to start the season with both, because Westbrook, there were a lot of rumors of him to Charlotte. Then they just drafted LaMelo, and they paid Gordon Hayward that contract. They don't really have money now. The Knicks, I don't think they're giving up assets. I think they're going in the right direction right now, so I don't really see them trading for Westbrook.
But we can always count on the Knicks to be the Knicks.
That is very true. But I just really don't see a team that would go after Westbrook at the moment. And then Harden, they said they wanted a star back for him, and I don't see Brooklyn trading Kyrie at the moment, since they signed him and KD to play together. And then Philly, I believe there was a report that said they wouldn't trade Ben Simmons, so I don't see either of them getting traded before the season starts.
Yeah, and that's interesting too, you know, the idea of trading Kyrie for Harden, when I don't know if that's what Houston wants, because I feel like if Kyrie and Westbrook, or Kyrie building a team around him, I think Houston would see that as, why would we build a team around Kyrie when we can build a team around Harden, who's a much better player and probably the number one option on a championship team if all goes right. Where Kyrie, I don't know if he's the number one option on a championship team. I don't think so. I think he's just that tier below. That's a number one option on a playoff team and a damn good team if he's got the right pieces around him. But I don't think it's a championship contender team. So then you turn into, okay, what can we turn Kyrie into? And it's at that point, you might as well just flip Harden for whatever extra assets you could get, as opposed to flipping Kyrie for lesser, you know, an 80% of James Harden or whatever. So that never really made sense to me, which is why I think you're right. I think Harden will for sure start the season there. I think Westbrook will too, maybe in a normal off season when teams have more time to map things out. Maybe this whole Westbrook thing would have been solved before the start of the season. But in reality, I think that this is something that we're 1 year away from this move happening. I can see if Brooklyn comes up short this season in the playoffs, I can see KD and Kyrie going to them, hey, full force, we need this, we need James Harden, and Brooklyn panicking and making it happen. And same with the Westbrook thing. I think the Westbrook thing is something that could maybe happen sooner, maybe in the season at the trade deadline, but probably this seems like something that's going to play out for a year, at least for Harden, maybe not for Westbrook.
Yeah, 100%. I think that to start the season, at least they'll be there. Harden, I mean, I've always viewed him as a Rockets guy for life, but I think if the assets are there, if the trade's there in order to get something great back for him or a great return, they'll pull the trigger if he doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, and I like NBA star trades just as much as the next guy, especially considering I have a podcast. So for me, my biggest podcasts are always the ones where the stars get traded or the stars move. So obviously, from just a fan perspective, I enjoy the movement. I enjoy figuring out, you know, the fit and all that before it happens and making predictions. And also, you know, I get a lot more traffic. But this does seem like something that the Harden thing is going to take at least a year, because it would be smart to let Brooklyn and Philly play out. And if neither Brooklyn or Philly, the best case scenario for Houston is neither of those teams win or go far in the playoffs, or even better, both of them underachieve and maybe lose in the second round. And then you can come to the table and Philly will be like, okay, the Ben Simmons is on the table. And then you got Brooklyn going, everything is on the table. Maybe even Kyrie, if we have to bring in a third team where we can move Kyrie there and they can ship assets to you, or however you want to do it. I just think that Houston would have so much leverage one more year from now, because even though Harden has, you know, even though Harden is the player and the players normally have the leverage, Harden is under contract for a couple more years. So Harden can still be revisited one year later. And if we look at the Anthony Davis trade, which is probably the most comparable star level talent trade when it comes to James Harden, you know, the Pelicans, it was only the Pelicans and the Lakers. Like, they sabotaged the entire market, and yet they still got the house for Anthony Davis. So I think Houston's in a good position. It's uncomfortable. I get it. You want to just move on. But I don't think they do. They've said that they're determined to work it out. But I get people wanting it to just be over with and move on. But I think that this is something that a year from now, the leverage will change. Do you see that? Or do you see this as something that they should do sooner rather than later?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, especially about the Pelicans point with Anthony Davis. I think that it makes a lot of sense. Like, if we just look at the assets that they got Brandon Ingram, all-star. Lonzo, I mean, it might not be panning out, but still second overall pick. And they just got a haul of picks in return. And then we see what Drew Holiday is getting traded for, 5 first-round picks essentially. I mean, yeah, James Harden, they should wait until they get the perfect package, exactly what they want, because at the end of the day, they have the superstar, so they have the most leverage.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's bring up another one of your teams. So what team do you want to go to next?
I guess we'll just stick with the Pelicans. I have them as interesting because I understand where they're going to an extent. So they obviously traded Drew Holiday for the Eric Bledsoe. They got George Hill, who they flipped with one of the 5 picks to get Steven Adams. And I think all those picks in return for Drew Holiday was a great flip. It was great. Drew Holiday, they're not really in a position to win right now. He doesn't fit the timeline, but it's great. 5 first round picks. However, when they sign Steven Adams to an extension for, I believe, 2 years, $35 million, I just don't really agree with that. I think they could have got someone that works with Zion for way less, or without giving up one of those first round picks. I just don't really agree with Steven Adams being their center for the long term. Like, Aaron Baines was on the market. He signed for, I believe, $9 million. Serge Ibaka, they could have threw him that $17 million. He would have fit perfectly next to Zion. Miles Turner, who they tried trading for last year, and his trade value is low now. They could have tried to get him next to Zion. I just don't really like this Steven Adams and Zion pairing. And then on top of that, they're going to have to give Lonzo an extension. I don't think they'll do it this year, but next year if they want to keep him. And they don't really have wings on the roster, which is something. Like, they have Ingram, but besides Ingram, I don't really think they have many other wings. Like, Etuan Moore, I guess. But
Etuan Moore is a 2K god. But yeah, I feel what you're saying. I agree. You know, you look at the Pelicans and it's like, wow, they have 8 really good players, but the roster isn't necessarily the perfect fit. I actually liked the Steven Adams trade until you brought up the idea of a Miles Turner or something. That's an interesting conversation. I think the extension and the reason they did the Steven Adams deal is because it's time to expire the same time that that Jackson Hayes and Zion expire. And so then Steven Adams is kind of the stopgap to make them more competitive now, while also being able to remain flexible or flexible for your upcoming Zion and Jackson Hayes, which by then in the 2 year window, I think the Pelicans have a really interesting question to answer there on is Jackson Hayes and Zion going to be a thing that works, or ultimately are we just moving Zion to the five and shooing Jackson Hayes away? So I think that's an interesting discussion that's further down the line, but this is a player that's kind of a stopgap. And I would have liked to get the Miles Turner as well, but again, Miles Turner is under contract for more years, so I think that's kind of probably why they did what they did, was the financial flexibility. And this is interesting too, the Steven Adams, because you brought up the Lonzo extension that's upcoming, and that's something that he had a very disappointing bubble. Before that he was playing absolutely great. But a lot of people were shocked by how poor he was in the bubble. And a lot of people I've heard said that, he just was mentally checked out. He didn't want to be there. I don't know if it was the bubble setting or if it was the roster or what was going on. So, I will give a player a pass because I think the bubble is an extremely challenging situation. And we've heard a lot of players say that it didn't work for them. It wasn't as simple as just going in a gym and playing basketball. It was being isolated from family. So maybe that was it. I'm willing to give them a pass on that. But I think when it comes to the extension, the Steven Adams extension, I think that kind of makes me curious, is, looking at their cap sheet, what's gonna happen with Lonzo? Are they gonna be willing to go over the cap to re-sign Lonzo?
Yeah, that's a big question right there, because Lonzo, he's obviously a good young player, but you don't want to overpay him, especially if he doesn't really fit with the roster that they have around them right now. Like, they got Eric Bledsoe now. I don't know how that's going to work with him and Lonzo. Then they drafted another guard, Kira Lewis at 13. I mean, I would have personally thought they would have went with a wing since they're already deep with guards. They took Nickeil Alexander-Walker last year. But yeah, we have to see what they do with Lonzo, and if they do extend him, how much they're willing to pay, and or how much the market's willing to pay, I guess.
And it's going to be a summer where there's a lot of cap space. And that's actually what James Edwards said on my podcast that made me feel a little bit better about the Mason Plumlee signing, because I'm sure you looked at that like, what's going on? And I promise I'm not going to get too deep into it, but a good point he offered that ties in here is that, that contract may look away this summer because of, you're seeing all these players get $5 million deals or take the mid-level or whatever, take some sort of exception. But in the next summer, we could see some more Timothy Mozgov contracts that just, 6 months after the contract, the franchise is scratching their head like, what the hell did we just do? And suddenly the bad contract this year, because all those teams have cap space next year and money to spend, could look a lot better once we see that offseason coming. So that's something that I think can also apply to the Steven Adams extension. It's a really interesting to see how they're going to maneuver their cap, because like you said, they need wings and there's a clear shortage there, but they have a lot of contracts that are tradable. They have Bledsoe, Steven Adams. They have a lot of those contracts that are big. They got some weight to them. They're 17, 18, 19 million, but you can flip those for a lot of different things, especially next summer. So I think that's ultimately where they're going, and I think that could be concerning because Lonzo having entering free agent at the right time with all those teams with cap space, all it takes is one desperate team, and Lonzo could be looking at a huge offer sheet that the Pelicans just don't want to match.
Yeah, 100%. Like, we see it happen all the time where restricted free agents, they just get crazy offers. Like Bogdanovich, in my personal opinion, I don't know if he's worth the 72 million that he got. And yeah, we just see it all the time, especially like a few years back with like Otto Porter and stuff. He got
Oh
that
yeah, he got the
crazy
bag.
deal. Yeah, there were a ton of free agents that offseason that got crazy deals off potential.
All right, let's jump to my last team then. For the actually wait, before we move off the Pelicans, one more thing. Okay, so I think we both think it was a relatively good offseason for them. They continued to get assets. They took care of Ingram. Everything seems to be in the right direction for them. We can argue the Steven Adams thing, but overall, I think it's a solid to great offseason for them, considering what they brought back in terms of future assets and talent. But they're in the West, and this might be the most competitive year ever. And they have a new coach and a lot of new pieces, and they come off an extremely disappointing bubble. So I feel like a lot of people, a lot of media pundits are going to want to write them in as a playoff team or this and that. And I'm not sure, honestly, what is fair expectations for them. Is playoffs too much? That seems too much expectation for me. But at the same time, I honestly, I could see a scenario where they don't even finish 12th. And that's just because the West is that good. So I don't know where I stand with them. So what's a fair expectation for you for the Pelicans this upcoming season?
I think 10th seed, I know it's not a goal. Like the goal should obviously be the playoffs, but I think around the 10th seed is reasonable for them because, like you said, the West is just super deep and it's a new roster, a lot of new pieces. It's going to be tough.
And a new coach, man. I'm happy for Stan Van Gundy, man. I know he didn't work out in Detroit, but I always loved him as a person and as a coach. I understand tactically he maybe didn't make the most of his situations, but I think that that was more so him balancing the GM and the coaching hat, whereas now he's coming to just be a coach. So I like Stan Van Gundy in New Orleans, and I'm excited for him. And it's going to be interesting. They're going to be a really interesting team to watch. But the last team I want to bring up for me is the Miami Heat, the other finals competitor, the Eastern Conference Finals champion. So they brought in Avery Bradley, Mo Harkless, and they re-signed Myers Leonard. They lost Jay Crowder. They extended Bam 5 years, $163 million. So my simple question with them is extending Bam essentially takes them out of the Giannis sweepstakes. I think that seems to be a sign that teams around the league believe that Giannis is going to ultimately re-sign with Milwaukee. I think that that's something that that has been said on Zach Lowe's podcast. That's something that's been said other places as well. So I think that there's a strong belief around the league that Giannis is ultimately going to re-sign with Milwaukee. And so now my question is, where does Miami pivot next to get a star if Miami is out of grasp? They don't have many firsts. They value the young players they have. They need the young players they have to be competitive and under good contracts, and they need them to overperform their contracts. So I where does Miami go from here? I mean, is this the team that they're running to try and win a title with, or are they looking at Or are they still looking for that move for another star? What are you doing if you have the GM hat for the Miami Heat?
If I'm the GM, I know Washington and Bradley Beal have said that they don't want to trade him. He doesn't want to leave, but you have Tyler Herro and they have some pretty good young assets. And if Bradley Beal wants out, I've heard rumors about him and John Wall not liking each other. You got to try to make that move because I think Tyler Herro, he could be great in the future, but he's no Bradley Beal, in my personal opinion, at least. And
Oh
that
yeah,
would
I'm with that 100%.
That would move them to that would just take them to another level. Like Jimmy Butler, he's a good scorer, but Bradley Beal, he'll be that guy for you at the end of the day.
I agree with that wholeheartedly, and I think that ultimately if that does become available, and things look the NBA dominoes are a real thing when it comes to the superstars. Like if James Harden is on the trade market, 'cause obviously 6 months ago, everybody was talking about, okay, when is Bradley Beal going to be a net? Not if, but when, and now all of a sudden James Harden's available and Brooke was like, hold my beer, like we got to go for this. This is Harden is the guy. So it could actually be a very interesting time for Washington because they could be entering the bidding at the wrong time where there's they now they have the cream of the crop and now they have somebody who's obviously still going to attract a ton of value wherever he goes, but maybe is diminished and maybe lost it is maybe losing some potential suitors because Philly and Brooklyn and these other teams are looking at James Harden. So I don't know. Do you think that that affects Bradley Beal's value, or do you think that that's something that Bradley Beal is just gonna Washington is gonna get what they get for Bradley Beal whenever they decide to trade him?
I think Washington's gonna ultimately get what they get because, like, there's not too many like stars or guys that can just give you 30 in the league. And since he has the ability to do that, I think they like no matter when they trade him, if it was last year or next year, they're still gonna get a lot of value out of Bradley Beal, regardless if Harden's on the market or not, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, that's ultimately where I lean. I do think though it can limit the suitors, but I do think at the end of the day, I just keep going back to the Anthony Davis, and obviously Bradley Beal is tiers below Anthony Davis, but I think that that showed a lot when a star can basically go thermonuclear and destroy all other suitors, and the Pelicans still get exactly, like the biggest bag they can get from the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers literally gave them pretty much everything they had except Kyle Kuzma, which a year later, I'm sure they wouldn't have minded throwing in the deal if they had to get it done. But yeah, I think that again, at the end of the day, when it comes to these superstars, they can demand trades and player empowerment's a real thing, and they have the power to move and they have the power to make organizations move them to where they like. But I do think organizations are starting to realize, hold on, we can still always get the bag. We don't have to just take the first offer the day Bradley Beal says, "Hey, I want to be a Miami Heat." That Miami's going to offer their first offer is going to be a low ball. That's just how negotiations work. And I can see Washington, look, if they're smart, thinking, "No, okay, don't take the first offer. I don't care if they're the only team in the sweepstakes. At the end of the day, we're going to get the right assets because they're the team that's desperate. They're the team that needs the star."
Yeah, 100%. It's best to wait as a trade suitor. Like I know Drew Holiday, once again another great example. Five first round picks, and I think Bradley Beal's a tier above him. So, yeah, they should definitely wait it out and try to see what they can get or get the best package as possible.
Yeah, man. It's going to be really interesting to see what Miami does because, they need those young guys too. So it's going to be really interesting if a star becomes available and is linked to Miami, what exactly is going to be moved back in the trade. But for now, let's jump to your last team of the offseason that stood out to you. Which team is it?
My last team is going to be the Atlanta Hawks. They drafted Onyeka Okongwu. I think that's how you say his name. They picked up Bojan Bogdanovic, 4 years, 72, I believe. They got Danilo Gallinari for 4 years, 80 something. My fault, I don't have the number off the top of my head. They picked up Chris Dunn, Rajon Rondo as well. And my biggest question, well, I actually have two questions with them. What happens with John Collins, and are they a playoff team? Because in my personal opinion, there are seven teams that are clearly ahead of them, but the eighth seed's up for grabs, and I don't know if they have enough talent and chemistry to get that eighth seed. I see a lot of people saying that they might be a top five seed on Twitter, which I think is crazy. But yeah, I'd love to hear if you think they're a playoff team and about John Collins' future.
Okay, let's go with the playoff first because that's what I had wrote. I said this is going to be a lot of people's sexy pick for the playoffs. Like you said, I wasn't seeing those five seed takes, but I was feeling like come prediction time, I was feeling like a lot of people were going to do that. But remember last year when everybody was saying Atlanta Hawks were going to be a seventh seed? So I get it. Their roster is more talented. They have more experienced players on their team. Their roster is just overall better than what it was last year. And you can expect improvements from Trae Young and all of that. But I ultimately think that this is a team that should win the eighth seed. I just look at the other eighth seed competitors. I look at, a Charlotte, a Detroit, a Washington, and a Orlando. And I think the Hawks are just better than those teams. But Not by a lot, not by a lot. I mean, any type of injury, any type of anything can change each of those teams' seasons. So they're not a lock. They would be my favorite for the eighth seed right now if I'm just, you know, free balling. But I these ideas of them, you know, climbing Indiana, Toronto, and you know, who else? Brooklyn was a seventh seed last year. They're damn sure not going to be a seventh seed this year. So it's gonna be a lot tougher to get five than I think people realize, because I assume Philadelphia is gonna be better. They're not gonna burst out like they did this year and just completely flail out and bust. Boston might be the team that takes a step back in terms of seeding, but they're obviously still gonna be, assuming Kemba's healthy and his knee is okay, they're gonna be relatively the same level of talent. Maybe even better if Jason Tatum does take that next level. But I just I don't see the Hawks getting, you know, past the seventh seed at best. You know, I look at all these East teams that were in the playoffs last year, and I say, okay, you know, they all should be there next year, and they should be relatively the same, if not better.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think that their ceiling for this season, at least, is the eighth seed. I can't imagine a world. I mean, for Hawks fans, hopefully I'm wrong, but I can't imagine a world where they do any better than eighth. But it'll be interesting to see how the lineup works. Clint Capella should be back for the season. I heard that Danilo Gallinari is going to be coming off the bench. That's what the Hawks GM said today. So that's going to be interesting as well. And John Collins wants a max. So I'd love to see where they go with that after just paying Gallinari, Bogdanovich, drafting Okongwu. I don't know. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, I think that's a very much a potential sign and trade in the off season. I think that's the direction it's going. I think John Collins is a good player that Atlanta Hawks want back, but again, I keep going to, I really think it's going to be close to 2016 again. Teams are going to be more concerned than they were in 2016. A lot of owners will not forget about that off season, and the league won't let them forget about that off season. So I think that while there are a lot of teams with cap space and a lot of money will be spent, for the most part, it will be more level-headed. But still, at the end of the day, it's going to be a wild offseason next season, especially if Giannis doesn't sign the Supermax, if Kawhi and Paul George say the Clippers aren't working. You know, there's a lot of things that can really change the offseason. And if all of those guys stay, then suddenly John Collins is looking at being one of the main guys, because he's sold as, you know, this young guy who's got a lot of talent. And then all of a sudden he gets that max that he's looking for, and the Hawks are forced to decide, do we want to max him? And match this, or do we want to sign and trade him to a team and maybe get some other assets back and just keep this pushing without him? So, yeah, I agree. I think the John Collins thing is something that, you know, we're going to have to wait and see, because I really think that that's going to come down to free agency. And I think we'll get inklings of it though in the playoffs, and and maybe if they make it there during the regular season, we'll see. You know, is John Collins' playing time going down? What's the word on him? I'm sure his agent will be leaking stuff if things aren't going the right way. So that's going to be something. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's going to be something that's going to be very interesting for the Hawks, who are a young team. Do they suddenly abandon one of their most prized young possessions in order to get these veterans to try to win?
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be really interesting to see how they go. I like the pieces that they got. I mean, DeAndre Hunter's still there, which is going to be nice. They have a lot of young pieces. It's going to be fun. It's going to be one of my league pass teams for sure next season.
They're definitely going to be a great league pass team. And just to recap who they brought in and out, for those that don't remember it. So they brought in Bogdanovich, like you said, on 4 year, 72. Gallinari, I don't remember the money on, and Rajon Rondo they brought in. They brought in Chris Dunn. They brought in Solomon Hill and Tony Snell. And of course, like you said, they still have their young core of John Collins, Trae Young, Kevin Huerter, DeAndre Hunter. They lost Vince Carter, who retired. They lost DeAndre Bembe. They lost Jeff Teague to the Celtics. And Bembe went to the Raptors, by the way. And they lost Dwayne Dedman, who was traded to Detroit. And we got to kind of also include Capella in there, you know, considering they got him at the trade deadline. And everything kind of went to, or you know, like kind of flailed out right after that, shortly with the pandemic that we're in. So the Hawks really didn't get the full Capella, the full like experience of Capella. So I almost kind of count him as a free agent too for them this year.
Yeah, basically, because he hasn't even suited up for them yet. And yeah, I'd love to see how they do the minutes with the young guys, because they still have a lot of young players. Cam Reddish as well. Yeah, I'd love to see how they mix it in. Do they try to develop those players more, or do they just give Gallinari a lot of minutes, Bogdanovich a lot of minutes, and just try to win now? I don't know. It's just going to be very interesting to see how this season goes for them.
Yeah, because I definitely think that because of they're gonna have a lot of heat on them. So if they are underperforming, I think there's gonna be a lot of talk, you know, about young guys versus old guys, the whole camp splitting, the idea of agents getting involved and trying to get players moved and all that. I think things could become very messy for the Hawks if they underachieve. However, I like their roster. I think they should be a playoff team. I would rock with them to get the eighth pick right now, the eighth seed. But again, we'll see. For now, Young Simba, I don't know if I'm going to have you on the podcast again before the year's over. I'm going to try to get you when the NBA season starts back up. But I got two quick things for you that are personal. So one, let's stick on the subject of basketball before we get to a little rap talk. And I did not get 2K21 this year. The first time I haven't gotten a 2K game or just a basketball game since I can ever remember. And the reason I did that was because I looked at, okay, the Xbox and the PlayStation are coming out in November. I'll get it with the new system. Now that the new system has all this shortage and crazy high demand, I'm not paying $9,000 for an Xbox or a PlayStation. So I don't know where I'm at this point. Do I break down and cop the current gen 2K21? Because I looked at that and it just looks like it's 2K20 with a sticker slapped on it that says 2K21. It looks like they put all their energy into 2K21 on the next gen.
Yeah, I would 100% not recommend getting the game. It's honestly terrible. I know that's probably not the greatest thing for me to say, but yeah, I would not recommend the game whatsoever.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Do you got the next gen yet?
Yeah, I have a PS5.
Oh, okay, yeah. I haven't been able to keep up on everybody's stuff the last couple weeks, so I'm gonna have to check your channel after this to see how it's like. And you liking it better?
Not really. If I'm being
Really?
honest, no, I'm not a big fan. But they released the patch today. I haven't really checked it out too much, but a lot of people are saying good things. But the first week or two, I haven't been a fan, to say that much, to say the least.
I mean, yeah, that's kind of 2K normal though. Usually they have that tough launch week, and then they kind of right the ship a little bit as the year goes on. But do you feel like the next gen one is the same or as 2K20, or like what's the kind of issues
The
with it?
park is I mean, or neighborhood, I believe it's called. It's different 100%. Like, it's a whole new vibe to it, but I feel like they did too much, if that makes sense. Like, there's billboards all over, the courts are always laggy and stuff. It's just they need to make it more simple, to put it that way. And then my team's the exact same. My league, I've heard, is the same for the most part. So I mean, it all depends on your perspective, I guess. But I'm
Yeah,
not the biggest
that's true.
fan.
Yeah, they tried to make the park look like GTA.
Yeah,
So
definitely.
we'll see. But lastly, man, I gotta get you some rap talk because I'm gonna get you on the rap side of the podcast too soon. So what's your albums of the year so far as we're close to the end of the year?
Conway, From a King to a God, and Benny, Burden of Proof. Those are my top two. I can't really tell you which one. And then number three would have to be Freddie Gibbs, Alfredo. Those are my top three. And then
Okay. Say it again.
Conway, From King to a God,
Okay.
Benny, Burden of Proof, Freddie Gibbs, Alfredo. And then my sleeper would be Katori Walker, Idols. I don't know if many people know about him, but
No, I don't. I I don't even, and I need to be put hip to that. So I'm gonna need you to send me that after the podcast, because I try to stay up on everything, and even that's something that slipped by me this year.
Yeah, that's my guy. I like him a lot. Shout out to
Okay.
Katori. Yeah.
Okay, man. I'm gonna check that. For me, man, it's Detroit 2. It's Detroit 2, Big Sean. That's my number one for sure. And the number two is also a clear step above. You know, as much as I love the Royce project, the Freddie and Alk project you talked about, Alfredo. I think that Limbo by Aminé is just incredible. I really like that album. Have you heard that?
Nah, I have not checked that out yet. I definitely have to.
Bro, I'm telling you, I think Aminé gets a certain rap because of his lyrical, or because of his, like, you know, his big hit Caroline. I think he's kind of boxed in as like a fun poppy rapper, but he is really, really dope at making songs, and he's really charismatic, and you see a lot of Kanye influence in him on this album. But this album I think is like him literally trying to make a classic. Not saying it is a classic, but this is him like trying to like his hardest to make a really good album, and it's really solid. He's rapping his ass off on that project.
All right, I'll definitely make sure to check that out tomorrow.
Yeah.
And yeah, I have to.
All right, but and did you like Detroit 2, or did you listen to it at all?
I'll be honest, I'm not a big Sean guy. I've never
Yeah.
really liked him. But the song with Wale and Anderson .Paak, that's still in the playlist. And of course, the track with Nipsey,
Yeah.
I gotta rock with that. But I've never really been a big Sean guy. Allegory though, I believe you said that
Yeah.
was three. I love that album. Shout
Yeah.
out to Royce.
Shout out to Royce, who just got Grammy nominated today.
Yes,
Much
sir.
deserved. Super happy for him. But yeah, I feel you. That's the thing I've run into with Big Sean, is that everybody that listened to the album, if they don't like Big Sean, they were just like, okay, yeah, like this is not bad, but it's still not for me. I haven't really heard anybody say like, yeah, like I just straight up don't like it. The people that don't like Big Sean, which I understand why. Like I really at first didn't understand it, but now as I've talked to more people that feel that way about Big Sean, I understand it. I totally disagree, but I understand why people feel that way about Big Sean. But yeah, I think that this is his best project, and I'm really thoroughly rocking with it. Of course, I might be a little bit biased because, you know, Detroit's not where I'm from, but it's where my heart is. So it's something that, you know, the stories about having Dave Chappelle, my favorite comedian, talk about Detroit, or having, you know, Stevie Wonder talk about Detroit. The Erykah Badu one don't make sense, but whatever. She's Erykah Badu, we let it fly. But that was really cool. And then I thought that it was a lot of songs, but I thought that each song was really good, and it there's nothing that really stood out as terrible or I could do without, because at the end of the day, I like literally every song on that project. So that's hard to do when you're doing 21 songs or 20 songs. So I enjoyed it, man. But yeah, I see why you feel the way you feel about Big Sean.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if you like all 21 songs, that's great for 2020, the way we're in with fast food music. So
Yeah.
that's a great album if it has 10 songs, 8 songs. That's a great album to me at this stage.
Yeah,
But
that's true. That's definitely true. But all right, young Sim, I'm gonna get you on to talk some more hip hop another time. I'm gonna let this one rock though, just because I wanted to give you some rap talk real quick, just because, you know, I know you're well versed in both the basketball world and the hip hop world, so I needed to get your takes on that. My boy, check him out, Young Simba, the 2K Messiah. I will link his YouTube channel in the description and his Twitter. And is you want me to link your Instagram as well?
Nah, it's fine.
Okay.
Already, yeah.
Yeah, I honestly I don't I think I follow you on Instagram, but I'm not even entirely sure if I've seen you on Instagram. I know I see you all the time on Twitter. So yeah, regardless, all the links that you need to find him and interact with him will be in the description of the podcast. Check it out. He's dope. He's my favorite 2K YouTuber, and I don't just say that 'cause he's on the podcast, but he makes great content. He's cool. He's got a real dope setup, especially if you're a hip hop fan. We'll get into that another time when we can kind of see visually what's going on. But yeah, man, continue to do the great work, and I look forward to collaborating with you again, my man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you to all the fans that listen.